Now, the another subheading in this chapter of Greek criticism of Aristotle is the function of tragedy, its emotional effects, catharsis, different theories. Catharsis, variety of interpretation. While defining tragedy, Aristotle writes that the function of tragedy is to arouse the emotions of pity and fear, and in this way to affect the catharsis of these or such like emotions. Aristotle has used the term catharsis only once, but no phrase, probably in ancient or modern literature, has been handled so frequently by commentators and critics and by poets. Most varied and ingenious explanations have been given. The controversy from the fact that Aristotle himself has not explained what exactly he meant by the word, nor do we get any direct aid from the poetics in interpreting the Greek phrase. For this reason, help and guidance has to be taken from his other works, more especially from Politics and his second Ethics. Further, the Greek word catharsis has three meanings. Its meanings, purgation, purification, and clarification. And each critic has used the word in one or the other of these varied senses and has reached accordingly at a different conclusion. All agree that tragedy arouses fear and pity, but there are sharp differences as to the process, the way by which the rousing of these emotions gives pleasure. We would first examine the different interpretations of word catharsis and then give the interpretation which seems most appealing and convincing. The other subheading is the purgation theory. Catharsis has been taken to be a medical metaphor, purgation denoting a pathological effect on the soul analogous to the effect of medicine on the body. By some, the process has been likened to homeopathic treatment, which the like curing the like, and thus it is said the rousing of pity and fear results in the purgation of these emotions. This view is borne out by a passage in the Politics where Aristotle refers to religious frenzy being cured by certain tunes which excite religious frenzy. In tragedy, pity and fear, artificially stirred, expel the latent pity and fear which we bring with us from real life. Such incidental emotions are anxiety, self-pity, etc., are also quieted. Q-U-I-E-T-E-D. In our sympathy for the sufferer on the stage, we forget our own troubles and worries. In the pleasurable calm which follows when the passion is spent, an emotional cure is wrought. Used in the medical sense, catharsis implies relief following previous excitation of the tragic emotions. Important critics like Twining, T-W-I-N-I-N-G, and Barney are also of the view that catharsis is a kind of homeopathic treatment. Freud and other psychologists also support this interpretation when they say that by helping patients to recall painful childhood experiences, neurosis can be cured. In the neoclassical era, catharsis was taken to be an allopathic treatment with the unlike curing unlike. In this respect, they followed the lead given by Giraldi Cinthio of 16th century Italy. Thus, the arousing of pity and fear was supposed to bring about the purgation or evacuation of other emotions like anger, pride, etc. The spectacle of suffering arouses our pity and fear, and we are purged of the emotions that caused the suffering. If the suffering is caused by emotions like anger, hatred, or impiety towards the gods, we are purged of such undesirable emotions because we realize their evil consequences. We learn from the terrible fates of evil men to avoid the vices they manifest. Thomas Taylor, in his Introduction to the Poetics, holds this view. The other subheading is Psychological Interpretation. F.L. Lucas rejects the idea that catharsis, as used by Aristotle, is a medical metaphor and says that the theater is not a hospital. Both Lucas and Herbert Reed regard it as a kind of safety valve. Pity and fear are aroused. We give free play to these emotions as we cannot do in real life, and this safe and free outlet of these emotions is followed by emotional relief. In real life, they are repressed, and in the theater, the free indulgence in these emotions aroused by the suffering of the hero is safe and brings relief to our pent-up souls. I.A. Richards' approach to the process is also psychological. Fear is the impulse to withdraw and pity is the impulse to approach. Both these impulses are harmonized and blended in tragedy, and this balance brings relief and repose. The other subheading is Ethical View. The ethical interpretation is that the tragic process is a kind of lustration of the soul, and inner illumination resulting in a more balanced attitude to life and its suffering. Thus, John Gassner says that only enlightenment, a clear comprehension of what was involved in the struggle, and understanding of cause and effect, a judgment on what we have witnessed, can result in a state of mental equilibrium and rest, and can ensure complete aesthetic gratification. Tragedy makes us realize that divine law operates in the universe, shaping everything for the best. During the Renaissance, Robertello and Castelverto, Castelverto, suggested that tragedy helped to harden or temper the emotions. Just as soldiers overcome their fear of death after seeing it frequently on the battlefield, so spectators become hardened to the pitiable and fearful events of life by witnessing them in tragedies. The other subheading is Purification Theory. Humphrey House rejects the idea of purgation in the medical sense of the term and is the most forceful advocate of the purification theory, which involves the idea of moral instruction and moral learning. It is a kind of moral conditioning which the spectators undergo. In his scholarly and penetrating discussion of the whole question, Humphrey House points out evacuation, or a qualitative change in the body brought about by a restoration of proper equilibrium, and a state of health depends on the maintenance of this equilibrium. Tragedy, by arousing pity and fear, instead of suppressing them, trains them and brings back the soul to a balanced state. He refers to Aristotle's Nicomachean, Nicomachean. He refers to Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics and other works and regards catharsis as an educative and controlling process. In his Ethics, Aristotle writes, "Virtue must have the quality of aiming at intermediate, I mean moral value, for it is this that is concerned with passions and actions, and in them there is excess, defect, and the intermediate. For instance, both fear and confidence and appetite and anger and pity, and in general pleasure and pain, may be felt both too much and too little, and in both cases not well. But to feel them at the right time, with reference to the right object, towards the right people, with the right motive, and in the right way, is what is characteristic and best, and this is characteristic of virtue." Tragedy rouses pity and fear from potentiality to actuality through suitable stimuli. It controls and trains them by directing them to the right objects in the right way, and exercises them within the limits of the play, as the emotions of the good and the wise should be exercised. When they subside to potentiality again after the play, it is more trained potentiality than before. Our emotional responses have been trained and brought nearer to the response of the wise and good. A qualitative change has been brought about in our system of emotional responses, and the result is emotional health. In Milton's phrase, they have been tempered and reduced to a just measure. This controlling and educative theory, says Humphrey House, is in keeping with Aristotle's entire philosophy. Thus, according to the purification theory, catharsis implies that our emotions are purified of excess and defect, are reduced to intermediate state, trained and directed towards the right objects at the right time, and in this way we are made virtuous and good. Catharsis, in this sense, is a kind of moral conditioning. When witnessing a tragedy, the spectator learns the proper use of pity, fear, and similar emotions. Butcher, too, agrees with the advocates of the purification theory when he writes, "The tragic catharsis involves not only the idea of emotional relief, but the further idea of purifying the emotions so relieved." He adds, "The poets found out how the transport of human pity and human fear might, under the excitation of art, be dissolved in joy, and the pain escape in the purified tide of human sympathy." Inadequacy of the above theories. The clarification theory. This is the new subheading. Inadequacy of the above theories. The clarification theory. However, neither the purgation theory nor the purification theory explains the whole thing. The basic defect of these theories is that they are too much occupied with the psychology of the audience, with the speculations regarding the effect of tragedy on those who come to the theater. It is forgotten that Aristotle was writing a treatise not on psychology but on the art of poetry. He is more concerned with the technique, the way in which an ideal tragedy can be written, and its nature, than with the psychological effects. For this reason, eminent modern critics like Leon Golden, O.B. Hardishan, and G.E. Els advocate the clarification theory. Leon Golden translates the relevant part of Aristotle's famous definition of tragedy as through the representation of pitiable and fearful incidents, tragedy achieves the catharsis of such incidents. Thus he relates catharsis not to the emotions of the spectators as in the other two theories, but to the incidents which form the plot of tragedy, to what happens in tragedy itself. And the result is the clarification theory, which we must now consider in some detail. As O.B. Hardison points out, indications as to Aristotle's meaning of the word catharsis are provided by the Poetics itself. While writing of the pleasure of imitative art in chapter 4, he says that the pleasure produced is associated with learning and that it is a pleasure enjoyed by men in general as well as by the philosopher. He points out that if well imitated, pictures even of corpses and ugly animals give pleasure. The paradox of pleasure being aroused by the ugly and the repellent in everyday life is also the paradox involved in tragedy. Tragic incidents are pitiable and fearful. They include even such horrible events as a man blinding himself, a wife murdering her husband, or a mother slaying her children. Such incidents, instead of repelling us as they would do in life, produce pleasure when presented in a great tragedy. This is the tragic paradox. This is the pleasure peculiar to tragedy. Aristotle clearly tells us that we should not seek for every pleasure from tragedy, but only the pleasure proper to it. Catharsis refers to the tragic variety of pleasure. To provide such pleasure is the function of tragedy, as well as the reason why men write, present, and witness tragedies. The catharsis clause is thus a definition of the function of tragedy and not of its emotional effects on the audience. In the view of O.B. Hardison, most translators have erred in relating catharsis not to the incidents of tragedy but to the emotions of pity and fear excited in the audience. The other subheading in this chapter is Sources of Tragic Pleasure. How does the pleasure proper to tragedy arise? Imitation doesn't produce pleasure in general, but only the sort of pleasure that comes from learning, and so also the peculiar pleasure of tragedy. Now, learning comes from discovering the relation that exists between the particular object or action represented and certain universal elements embodied in it. The poet might take his material from history or tradition, but he selects and orders it in terms of probability and necessity and represents what might be rather than what is. He rises from the particular to the general, and so in more universal and more conducive to understanding, more philosophical, as Aristotle puts it, than history, which deals with the particular alone. The events depicted in tragedy are presented free of chance and accidents, which obscure their real meaning and significance, and thus tragedy enhances understanding and leaves the spectator, in Butcher's word, face to face with the universal law. The tragic poet begins by selecting a series of incidents that are intrinsically pitiable and fearful. He may borrow them from history or legend, or invent them as do most modern writers. He then presents them in such a way as to bring out the probable or necessary principles that unite them in a single action and determine their relation to this action as it proceeds from its beginning to its end. When the spectator has witnessed a tragedy of this type, he will have learned something. The incidents will be clarified in the sense that their relation in terms of universals will have become manifest, and the act of learning, says Aristotle, will be enjoyable. Thus, according to this interpretation, catharsis means clarification of the essential and universal significance of the incidents depicted, leading to an enhanced understanding of the universal law which governs human life and destiny, and such an understanding, even when the incidents depicted are ugly or repellent, leads to pleasure, the proper pleasure of tragedy. In this view, catharsis is neither a medical term nor a religious or moral one, but an intellectual one. It refers neither to the purgation of the painful, the excessive, and the morbid in the emotional responses of the audience, neither does it refer to the purification or moral conditioning of their emotions. The term doesn't refer to the psychology of the audience at all. It refers to the incidents depicted in the tragedy and the way in which, by his artistic treatment, the poet reveals their universal significance. Catharsis is a process of learning and therefore pleasurable. Another subheading in this chapter is the merits of clarification theory. The clarification theory has many merits. In the first place, it interprets the clause as a reference to the technique of the tragedy and not to the psychology of the audience, and thus recognizes the true nature of the poetics as a technical treatise. Secondly, the theory is based on what Aristotle says in the Poetics itself, and needs not the help and support of what Aristotle has said in his other works on politics and ethics. Thirdly, it relates catharsis both to the theory of imitation outlined in chapter 1 to 4 and to the discussion of probability and necessity in chapter 9. Fourthly, the theory is perfectly in accord with the current aesthetic theories. To quote a few examples, Francis Ferguson uses the word perception, James Joyce epiphany or inner vision, and Austin Warren uses rag for order to indicate the nature of the satisfaction or pleasure derived from tragedy. What all these critics mean to say is that the experience of tragedy is a kind of insight experience, and this experience is pleasurable because it is a kind of learning, the learning of the true relation between the particular incidents of the plot and the universal laws of human life. The phrase insight experience used by modern critics to designate the function of tragedy is very much like Aristotle's catharsis when interpreted to mean clarification. Purgation and purification merely incidental. This is another subheading. However, it must be remembered that according to Aristotle, the basic tragic emotions are pity and fear, and both these are painful emotions. If tragedy is to give pleasure, pleasure that comes from learning, the pity and fear, or at least the painful elements in them, must somehow or the other be eliminated. Fear is aroused when we see someone like us suffering. and apprehend that a similar fate might befall us, and so it causes great pain. Pity is a feeling of pain caused by the sight of undeserved suffering of others, suffering which we might expect to befall us also. Pity and fear are reciprocal and painful. The events of tragedy are pitiable because they seem undeserved, and fearful because we fear that they may happen to us. In the tragedy, the spectator sees that it is the tragic error or hamartia of the hero which results in suffering, and so he learns something about the universal relation between character and destiny. By the end, he perceives a coherent relation between the hero's character and his end. This will alleviate, if not eliminate, his pity, and by the same token, reduce his fear for himself. Note that the alleviation is a byproduct of the learning that produces the tragic pleasure, not its chief object. It is the statement of O.B. Hardison. Thus, there is some purgation or purification, but it is merely incidental and secondary. And finally, we come to the conclusion. To conclude, Aristotle's conception of catharsis is mainly intellectual. It is neither didactic nor theological. Though it may have a residual theological element, as tragedy had its basis in religious ritual, Aristotle's catharsis is not a moral doctrine requiring the tragic poet to show that bad men came to bad ends, nor a kind of theological relief arising from discovery that God's laws operate invisibly to make all things, even suffering, work out to be the best. In the church mass, a part of the pleasure arises from learning, but much of it is the result of transcendental causes which cannot be explained in rational terms. Some of the ritual experience of the Catholic Mass is duplicated in the experience of tragedy, and hence cannot be explained in rational terms. The tragic pleasure is no doubt the pleasure of learning, but there is also no doubt that learning doesn't explain the whole thing. There are many connotations of the experience which are not covered by Aristotle's treatment and which cannot be rationally explained. But the clarification theory comes closer to defining the essential quality of the tragic experience than didactic and theological explanations. Thus, according to this interpretation, catharsis means clarification of the essential and universal significance of the incidents depicted, leading to an enhanced understanding of the universal law which governs human life and destiny, and such an understanding, even when the incidents depicted are ugly or repellent, leads to pleasure, the proper pleasure of tragedy. In this view, catharsis is neither a medical term nor a religious or moral one, but an intellectual one. It refers neither to the purgation of the painful, the excessive, and the morbid in the emotional responses of the audience, neither does it refer to the purification or moral conditioning of their emotions. The term doesn't refer to the psychology of the audience at all. It refers to the incidents depicted in the tragedy and the way in which, by his artistic treatment, the poet reveals their universal significance. Catharsis is a process of learning and therefore pleasurable. Another subheading in this chapter is the merits of clarification theory. The clarification theory has many merits. In the first place, it interprets the clause as a reference to the technique of the tragedy and not to the psychology of the audience, and thus recognizes the true nature of the poetics as a technical treatise. Secondly, the theory is based on what Aristotle says in the poetics itself, and needs not the help and support of what Aristotle has said in his other works on politics and ethics. Thirdly, it relates catharsis both to the theory of imitation outlined in chapter 1 to 4 and to the discussion of probability and necessity in chapter 9. Fourthly, the theory is perfectly in accord with the current aesthetic theories. To quote a few examples, Francis Ferguson uses the word perception, James Joyce epiphany or inner vision, and Austin Warren uses rag for order to indicate the nature of the satisfaction or pleasure derived from tragedy. What all these critics mean to say is that the experience of tragedy is a kind of insight experience, and this experience is pleasurable because it is a kind of learning, the learning of the true relation between the particular incidents of the plot and the universal laws of human life. The phrase insight experience used by modern critics to designate the function of tragedy is very much like Aristotle's catharsis when interpreted to mean clarification. Purgation and purification merely incidental. This is another subheading. However, it must be remembered that according to Aristotle, the basic tragic emotions are pity and fear, and both these are painful emotions. If tragedy is to give pleasure, pleasure that comes from learning, the pity and fear, or at least the painful elements in them, must somehow or the other be eliminated. Fear is aroused when we see someone like us suffering and apprehend that a similar fate might befall us, and so it causes great pain. Pity is a feeling of pain caused by the sight of undeserved suffering of others, suffering which we might expect to befall us also. Pity and fear are reciprocal and painful. The events of tragedy are pitiable because they seem undeserved, and fearful because we fear that they may happen to us. In the tragedy, the spectator sees that it is the tragic error or hamartia of the hero which results in suffering, and so he learns something about the universal relation between character and destiny. By the end, he perceives a coherent relation between the hero's character and his end. This will alleviate, if not eliminate, his pity, and by the same token reduce his fear for himself. Note that the alleviation is a byproduct of the learning that produces the tragic pleasure, not its chief object. It is the statement of O.B. Hardison. Thus, there is some purgation or purification, but it is merely incidental and secondary. And finally, we come to the conclusion. To conclude, Aristotle's conception of catharsis is mainly intellectual. It is neither didactic nor theological. Though it may have a residual theological element, as tragedy had its basis in religious ritual, Aristotle's catharsis is not a moral doctrine requiring the tragic poet to show that bad men came to bad ends, nor a kind of theological relief arising from discovery that God's laws operate invisibly to make all things, even suffering, work out to be the best. In the church mass, a part of the pleasure arises from learning, but much of it is the result of transcendental causes which cannot be explained in rational terms. Some of the ritual experience of the Catholic Mass is duplicated in the experience of tragedy and hence cannot be explained in rational terms. The tragic pleasure is no doubt the pleasure of learning, but there is also no doubt that learning doesn't explain the whole thing. There are many connotations of the experience which are not covered by Aristotle's treatment and which cannot be rationally explained. But the clarification theory comes closer to defining the essential quality of the tragic experience than didactic and theological explanations.